This is Franchise Today, brought to you by FRM Solutions, providers of the best-in-class software solutions for franchise relationship management. Franchise Today is your destination for weekly information, conversations, and interviews with accomplished industry leaders, all of whom share best practices for sustainable growth and sensible franchising. Here now, your host, Stan Friedman, to kick off this week's podcast.
Today is Wednesday, November 5th, 2025. I'm Stan Friedman, and this is Franchise Today. Well, this week, we move to the investment banker side of the franchise landscape when I chat with Patrick Gallagher, founder, CEO, and managing partner at Boxwood Partners. If I were to ask you, what Stretch Zone, Advantaclean, Forever Young, Koala Insulation, Monster Tree Service, Junk King, Bright Star, Shelf Genie, Franchise Fastlane, IFPG, The Pizza Factory, and The Lash Lounge all have in common, would you have guessed that the answer would be the professional guidance provided by the middle market investment bankers at Boxwood Partners, where these brands, along with dozens of others in the franchise world, have been prepped for their liquidity events with a client-first, solutions-oriented approach to M&A advisory. Bottom line is Boxwood spends the time necessary to thoroughly understand their clients and their businesses, represent them with integrity, and work relentlessly to achieve the best outcome possible for them while enabling them to focus on running their businesses. When we return from a quick timeout, I'll introduce you to Patrick Gallagher, founder, CEO, and managing partner at Boxwood Partners. Stay right there. We're coming right back.
Franchise Today will be right back. But first, a word from our sponsors.
This portion of Franchise Today is brought to you by Outreach Genius, the laziest and most powerful way to use voice AI to book more appointments. Outreach Genius is so simple to use, it almost feels illegal. Forget dashboards, endless forms, or hours of AI tutorials. With Outreach Genius, your franchisees can create, launch, and manage AI call agents entirely through WhatsApp or any text application. No prompts, no learning curve, no AI experience required. Your franchisees will simply text AI Genius telling them what their business does and what kind of calls they want handled, inbound, outbound, or missed leads. And just like that, the agent goes live. Just recently launched, Outreach Genius is already making a difference. $100,000 in revived contracts for a flooring company. 19 cold leads converted in 12 days for a landscaping business. 98% fewer missed calls for a plumbing brand, saving them thousands. If you're a home service franchisor in plumbing, HVAC, roofing, painting, handyman services, landscaping, window cleaning, carpet cleaning, duct cleaning, gutters, exterminators, the list goes on and on. This is the fastest way to help your franchisees build rock-solid appointments right now. Want free access? Be one of the first 10 franchisors to visit outreachgenius.ai to let them know you heard about them on Franchise Today. Outreach Genius will hook them. Your franchisees will book them. That's www.outreachgenius.ai. Once the youngest CEO on the London Stock Exchange, Patrick Gallagher has also checked the boxes on all three legs of the franchise stool: franchisor, franchisee, and supplier. In fact, as you'll hear today, Patrick made a minority investment in Sweet Frog Franchising in 2012, contributing to the growth of the frozen yogurt brand from 15 to 350 units, then stepping into the role of chairman and CEO before completing the sale of the brand to MTY Kahala in 2018. And to this day, he remains a multi-unit franchisee of Sweet Frog. We've got a lot to unpack today, and he's here right now to do just that. Patrick Gallagher, welcome to Franchise Today.
Thanks for having me, Stan. Look forward to the conversation.
Likewise, it's been something we flirted with for a long time. For some reason or another, we just both put our heads down in a different direction, got busy with other things. But here we are, finally making it happen, and I'm looking forward to the conversation in that. Most conversations that deal with franchising and the portfolios and the private equity or big roll-ups that are going on for the past several years are usually focused on the buy side. And today we're going to be talking to somebody that represents the sell side, which is not something I hear as frequently talked about. And so I'm looking forward to gaining some wisdom and insights from what it is you deal with every day. But what we have to do first, Patrick, is we have to do what I always do. We have to take a trip back into the Wayback Machine, and you have to go way back to where it was and what you were doing when franchising found you and bumped into you, which is what usually happens unless your name is Dwyer or Titus or something like that.
Well, I appreciate that, Stan, and appreciate you having me on. At Boxwood, and I don't know if you want to go back, my prior life before investment banking in Boxwood was a fintech company doing investor relations and financial communications for public companies. So, you know, long story short, I got extremely lucky, cut a deal with Yahoo back in 1996 to do some managed co-location of some of their Yahoo Finance web pages. On the back of that, ended up going public in July of 2000, made a series of acquisitions around the world in the investor relations and fintech space, and then did a tender offer and took the company private in 06. Shortly after, the private equity firm and I had a disagreement on the future of the company, and I ended up starting Boxwood with two investment bankers from Harris Williams. So that's how Boxwood came to be. And I was CEO, actually the youngest CEO in the London Stock Exchange back in 2000 at 29. And then after that run, I started Boxwood and really started focusing on the sell side and how could we actually do a better job than the typical boutique investment bank does. And got lucky, and in 2010, ended up working with Smartbox Franchising and Big Box in the portable storage space. So got some exposure to franchising fairly quickly in the investment banking, the starting of Boxwood. And then in 2012, made a minority investment in Sweet Frog Frozen Yogurt, which at that point was a licensing entity and not a franchise, and quickly hooked up with Lee Plave and their law firm and transitioned it to a franchise from a license model, and learned a lot about the state of Maryland and other states and franchising law as we started selling license agreements and then had to convert everybody and do rescission letters, and luckily was able to transition that quite successfully. And within 6 years, we had 380 locations in 41 states. So I got a lot of exposure, both on the advisory side with a few deals here and there, and then also on the franchisor. I took over as CEO from the chairman's role in 2015, and then we exited to Kahala in 2018. And right around that time, we started doing a lot of investment banking work in the franchisor space with deals like Jeff Duden's Avanaclean and Josh Skolnick. We sold Monster Tree and Redbox Plus for him to Belfour, and Monster Tree to Authority Brands. And so we quickly started building our experience set, as you said earlier, on the franchisor side. And now I'm a franchisee of Sweet Frog. So, kind of lucky that I get to see the franchise world from supplier to franchisor to franchisee all at the same time.
I think it's a great multiplier for perspective. I don't think there are better franchisors in the world possible than those that are also seeing through the paradigm of a franchisee the impact of corporate or the negative impact that could be provided by corporate. You can't possibly have the clarity of vision to understand the ripple effects that follow better than one who's been on both sides of the equation, right?
It's great context for understanding how important franchisee profitability is to the whole system. The franchisor can only stay profitable if its franchisees are profitable in the long run, and it can only grow in enterprise value. And, that's something I preach to every emerging franchisor that calls for advice is, really focus on the profitability of the first 15, 20, 25 franchisees before anything else.
I used to tell franchisees when I was a czar that I don't make 6 cents until you ring up a dollar. So we've got to make you money. We've got to make you profitable.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. And getting the right franchisees on the bus early on is incredibly important. Without the right franchisees, helping drive the economics at the unit level early on, it's really hard to build a franchisor from 10, 20 units up to 100 units.
So Patrick, I talk a lot in metaphors, and I'm wondering if there's an application to truth to what I'm thinking in my head, and I'm going to pop the question and ask you, or if it's off the reservation, you tell me that too. But I kind of liken what you do from my understanding to the difference between somebody who is going to sell their house and thinks doing it by owner on their own is a good idea instead of first realizing all of the things that they don't know, much less with the things they don't know that they don't know, and try and do it on their own. Would there be any merit to likening the two?
There is. But I think you kind of know what your house is when you're going to sell it. You know, one of the key things for us is we really help founder, owner, or family understand just what operational EBITDA or ongoing EBITDA looks like. Most accountants or most audits are done for tax purposes and expensing versus using depreciation or removing one-time expenses. So every kind of $5 or $10 million EBITDA business is not created equal. So really, you know, our team is very data intensive. We've got a lot of former CPAs on staff as investment bankers, and we really help our clients increase what we're going to show a prospective buyer. So it's kind of like adding a fifth or a sixth bedroom onto a four bedroom house, you know, or adding 1,000 square feet with very little, you know, additional effort. So for example, I mean, a lot of people forget to take out recruitment costs of a one-time new hire that isn't an ongoing expense to the business. I mean, there's always one-time expenses in the P&L, and that's why, you know, we spend a lot of time before taking on a client on rebuilding their P&L, putting it into the model that we expect the private equity groups to want to see, and, you know, making sure we're putting the best foot forward before we go to market.
I just think that there's so much value that is subliminal, I guess, because it's the things that you don't know are the ones that are going to get you in trouble. And even if you know the ins and outs of your business, as you suggest, the perspective of what's important on the other side of the table to somebody who's buying your business,
yep,
and raising the watermark as high as it can go to make certain you can hit that mark.
And it's created a competitive tension between potential buyers. I mean, we sold Junk King, and we sold Junk Luggers, and two of the big aggregators in the residential services market, neither had kind of a similar business in those lines. So we knew the marketplace that there was going to be several franchisor aggregators out there who were going to want Junk King and Junk Luggers to be plug and play. So it's kind of like an art auction at that point. It's who wants which brand and how bad do they want it versus the other people bidding on it, and, you know, creating that competitive tension during the process.
So that part of your business, what we would call strategic acquisition, is that right?
That's correct. Yep. And it's making sure that we, put together the jigsaw puzzle where figure out which pieces are going to go better where and which markets overlap better and, you know, where fits in really well.
I think Shelley's son, a couple of weeks ago, sitting where you are today, talking about her life and the next chapter in it, she made the greatest statement in the world in support of what you do and how you do it, when she explained to my audience that prior to her acquisition by Peak Rock, she almost was at the finish line with somebody ahead of that transaction. And it wasn't until very close to the finish line that she pulled the plug on it. And she didn't feel that she had the alignment that was needed. And I think that those are the kinds of places where if somebody could sell on their own, but if somebody doesn't have their back and putting those puzzle parts in place for them or with them, then I don't know that you're ever going to get to the right place or to the best place you might have gotten otherwise.
It's very difficult to work a transaction on your own when you only have one party on the other side of the table. So that competitive tension, the urgency it creates, when one buyer knows that we have three other buyers waiting for them to over-negotiate, you know, one deal point on the purchase agreement or in the new operating agreement, it keeps them honest. It keeps them second guessing how aggressive they can be on the purchase agreement, on the documents, and they're much more willing to overlook a miss on the financials for 1 month or 2 months as you get ready to close. So knowing that you have backup, knowing that you have other parties interested in the brand and wanting to put together a deal keeps your primary buyer much more honest and gets the deal done a lot quicker.
Patrick, what stage of the life cycle does a founder need to be at before it makes sense to have a conversation with someone like you?
You know, that's a great question. I get asked that all the time. I mean, our average deal size is probably right around $100 million enterprise value. But, you know, we've done deals as small as $20 million. If we know the buyer universe, we know they're in a great space. They've got a lot of sold but not yet open locations. We know where that asset's going to go in the marketplace. We'll go down quite far into kind of a $2 to $3 million EBITDA deal. But most of our clients are kind of $7.5 to $15 million of EBITDA.
I think you're the only person professionally in the franchise world I've ever heard say this, that sold but not open in most minds is not a good number. Too many people that are selling franchises instead of awarding them can get way over their skis and have an awful lot of units sold, but no time or resources available to get them open.
That's one of the things we look at very closely when we're looking at taking on a new client. Sold but not yet open is a great thing as long as they're opening on a defined schedule and you know that from signing to openings. If it's a three-pack and you have one opening each year, you got to look at what that franchisee's done on his first or second unit, you know, and how valuable that third unit's going to be based on their track record of opening. And that gets back to the unit level economics. If the franchisees are doing well and opening on schedule, that adds a lot of value to what we can model in from a maturity curve adjustment and what the system's going to look like today. If they stopped selling new franchises and they just opened what they've already sold, what embedded EBITDA would there be in that system if they just never sold another franchise? So we usually provide, you know, we usually do two or three different EBITDAs across a client, and private equity firms that play in the space, they definitely understand how we're pulling those together and how they should look at them and how they should structure their LOIs or IOIs initially off of the different models that we show them.
I think we've come to a great place to take a quick break. On the other side of the break, I want to come back and actually get into the process. What is the experience going to be for a founder that engages with Boxwood, and how much time, energy, commitment, and money does it take there to get something done? I've always said in franchising, the best way to make a small fortune is to start with a large one. So you can help us get into some better understanding of what that might look like as well. We're talking today with Patrick Gallagher, founder, CEO, and managing partner of Boxwood Partners. This is Franchise Today. I'm Stan Friedman. Don't go anywhere. We're coming right back.
Franchise Today will be right back. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Franchise Today is brought to you by FRM Solutions, offering the only CRM tool built exclusively for franchising that lets you have it your way. Whether you're a single brand needing professional tools across departments or a portfolio of brands needing franchise-specific CRM across the enterprise, either way, FRM satisfies the needs of many with the power of one. That's right, one single instance of FRM is all it takes across departments or across brands. So if you've had it with inflexible, one-size-fits-all CRM, end your frustration today. FRM offers robust dashboarding, tailored reporting, and with open APIs, FRM pushes, pulls, and integrates with other databases, providing you with a single source of truth. Don't just take my word for it. Visit them at frmsolutions.com and order up a demo today. And we're back with Patrick Gallagher, managing partner, founder, and CEO at Boxwood Partners. So let's talk about the experience that a founder would have. I can only think of one person. You may know him, actually. Frank Fumes, who I'm talking about, founder of I-9 Sport. I worked with Frank way back when he was just starting to get nervous about not knowing what it was he needed to know. His business kind of outgrew him, and he didn't have the help of somebody like you. He really didn't know what the next move was going to look like. Now, he got very lucky and ended well for him, but luck's not a strategy, is it?
It's not. It does work on occasion, but I've never understood a founder who successfully builds a business over a decade, then thinking they can do something on their own that they've never done before and do it successfully. And Grant Marks from Riverside, who was on a panel with me at Springboard a couple of weeks ago, and he answered the question from the audience and said that Riverside's never sold a company without hiring an investment bank. So there's a reason why private equity firms always hire us or hire a firm like Boxwood when they go to move that asset to the next private equity firm. And, you know, it's just a very hard process for a founder owner to run a business at the same time they're running a transaction. It's a full-time, we always have 4 to 5 Boxwood team members on each deal. Can you imagine taking 4 or 5 resources from your management team and trying to field all the diligence requests and put together all the information that a buyer is going to need properly? Really causes the business to falter if you take your eye off the ball and try to manage a process at the same time. We spend a lot of time with our clients trying to make sure they focus on their business. The best thing our clients can do for us is perform well during our process. If they start focusing their attention on what we're doing, you know, that takes their eye off the ball. And we really want them making sure franchisees are happy, making sure franchisees are profitable, and making sure they're selling new territories to the right franchisees. We don't need them worrying about spreadsheets and models and, you know, what we're doing on the other side.
What does it look like from front to back on an average transaction in your space? How long has it taken? It's got to be terribly difficult to be disciplined enough to do what you just described and not get over involved in the transaction at the expense of the business.
Yep. Our typical process is about 7 months from start to finish, from engagement to the time the transaction finishes up. All of our clients do a sell-side quality of earnings on the front end. So as soon as we're engaged with a new client, we get them to hire a third-party accounting firm to do a sell-side quality of earnings. And that's a best practice that every private equity group does. They always do a front-side sell-side quality of earnings prior to going to market. We put together the materials. We get the teaser together, the NDA. We pull together the target list of who we're going to go out to. Our typical process typically includes about 250 to 300 potential investors / buyers. We get them all the information. We get them the confidential information memorandum. And then we ask for a first round bid called the indication of interest, the IOI. On a typical deal, we end up getting about 15 to 20 IOIs. And then from there, we down select the top 8 to come in to meet with management and do a 3-hour meeting to discuss any key issues, any key topics. Also gives our clients the chance to interview these potential buyers and investors and find out whether they're a good fit, whether they have the right operating cadence, whether they're the right personalities, and what added value that private equity group might bring to the to our client that might help them. And then from there, we down select to 1 LOI. We ask for the second bid, which is called an LOI after the management meetings, usually about 2 weeks after. And then it's usually about 45 to 60 days of due diligence after the LOI stage. So it's 7 months in total. And we try to keep every buyer on the same timeline, or we do keep every buyer on the same timeline. So it gives us plenty of opportunities to go back to people and tell them, hey, everybody else is 10 million higher than you or 15 million higher than you. And in the process of what are you seeing different about this franchisor than everybody else? Do you really want to be the final LOI here, or do you want to let somebody else buy this? And gives us a lot of opportunity to push the value and the terms on behalf of our clients.
What percentage of these deals make it to the finish line?
We have an incredibly high percentage. We had one during COVID that was a fitness chain with about 300 locations. That fell apart at the finish line because COVID happened. But if the company's performing well and we don't have World War III going on or a pandemic, I would say we're too small of a firm to take on deals that aren't going to close. It does happen occasionally that a client determines that they've had a mind change. I've had clients determine they want a minority round last minute versus a majority round. Or we have one right now that we didn't get bids where we wanted them to be. So we're going to do a debt recap and then go back to market next year. So it does happen, but it's very, very rare that we don't get a deal done with the process. So we have a picture up in the office that says, trust the process. And the Boxwood process works, and we've done 100 plus deals, and it brings the best value, the best terms, and the best partner to our clients.
I think one of the smartest people I've known in the money world and franchising helped me understand how he is brand agnostic when it comes to buying a company. He said, I've got a formula, and I look for the numbers. I look for the right formula that matches my formula, and that business is run that way. It doesn't matter what the brand is. It's going to do well. I'm going to buy it well. I'm going to sell it well, and it's going to happen like clockwork no matter what market segment it is. If they've got that formula, I'm good. So there's a lot more emotion in most people than that, isn't there?
In my mind, brand does matter. There's some brands that have that X factor that click with the consumer. That usually comes through in the numbers. There's some brands that you look at it and you're just like, well, you know, this doesn't really have the cachet that an Orange Theory or Planet Fitness. I mean, brands get built off of happy franchisees. So it goes back to, I hate to say it, unit level economics and how excited your system is. And I kind of view investment banking the same way, Stan. Our former clients have kind of helped build Boxwood. I mean, former clients like Jeff Duden, Barry Falcon from Shelf Genie, Jeff Skolnick from Monster Tree. It's kind of like having really excited franchisees in your system that go out there and get new franchisees and validate well. We've just been very blessed to have a lot of great former clients like Shelley and David Barr at Lash Lounge. And we've done a great job for a lot of great clients and continues to pay dividends as we build the Boxwood brand in the marketplace.
Well, when you look at the roster of transactions and the people associated with them on your website, it brings to mind a Stephen Coveyism, which is begin with the end in mind, and it all works out right, right?
Yeah, I remember when I first met Ryan and Carrie from Fastlane, and I was speaking at a broker conference, and we started talking about whether private equity would ever really be interested in the FSO model and the FSO business. And, you know, we were able to bring Southfield Capital to the table there. They really didn't have much franchise experience, and they fell in love with the model, and they were more of a sales and marketing and business services private equity firm. And, you know, we pulled them into the franchise space, and, you know, Fastlane continues to do very well. So
in the time we've got left, let's talk about another recent entry that's had the spotlight put upon it, and that's franchisees in private equity. How do you see that hitting?
I'm the first one to admit that we've sold several Precision Garage Door franchisees. We've got a few large franchisee groups right now in the pipeline that we've got mandates with. And 10 years ago when I started, 15 years ago in the franchise space, QSR and fitness were the only two real sectors within the franchising community that had private equity in the Z base. And now we're seeing a lot of demand for resi services franchisees from the private equity market, which is great to see. It comes back to that these franchisees within the Neighborly system and Authority Brand system, Power Brand system, they're really profitable. They've got great brands behind them, and the franchisors have come to appreciate the value of having good private equity groups as franchisees, where that really wasn't the case 5-10 years ago within the Dwyer Group, and everyone was afraid of having private equity own 10-15% of their system. Now it's very much welcome.
I remember once when I was still on the franchisor side and attending a broker conference, and it seemed like the overwhelming number of brands that were at that conference were in the senior care space, and everybody thought, God, it's crowded here. I mean, where is there room for more of this?
Yeah.
And it reminds me too now, when I think about private equity, and Roark Capital was it for a while, and now look what's gone on in this world. And yet, when you look at Alicia Miller's book, she'll tell you that the available amount of funding that's going to be coming franchising's way isn't anywhere close to capacity yet. Like, the money that's coming is 10 times, 80 times, 100 times more than what's already here. And so what do you see ahead? What does it look like for you?
I remember when Roark was the game, and they've done, you know, off the back of Carvel, they've built an amazing firm. I mean, it's Neil and Steve, and I mean, the team there, they're the 900-pound gorilla in franchising. We've never sold them a business, though, so just they have not yet to buy one of our franchisors. But, every day there's a new private equity group who contacts us, who wants to learn about franchising, who wants to understand why other private equity groups have done so well within the franchise space. When you look at how successful Jim and Doug have been at Princeton Equity, fairly short time period, they've done tremendously well, raised their second fund. Eagle Merchant out of Atlanta has done tremendously well. They were initially on the franchisee side with Planet Fitness, and now they own several franchisors, and they're still on the franchisee side of, you know, some of their investments. So there's a lot of firms out there who have made great returns for their LPs in the franchise space. And once again, that's just driving more private equity firms to start looking at the franchise business and the franchise model as one that they should get into and have an allocation towards.
And some of them, like Riverside, have bought Neighborly once, twice, three times?
I don't think Riverside is ever going to be able to buy Neighborly again. But I think KKR, it traded from Riverside to Harvest and now to KKR. The next, either it's the Blackstone next or it's going to be an IPO next. It's gotten to the point that it's beyond Riverside. We helped with Apax with Authority Brands, and there's a lot of money chasing franchisors, and a lot of the money loves the residential services side of the business. And with AI coming, I see another 08-09 when it comes to corporate refugees. I mean, you just saw Amazon lay off 14,000 employees. You're seeing a lot of white collar jobs starting to disappear, and those are perfect franchisee candidates for especially some of the low-cost residential services type franchisees. I see another boom coming in 26 and 27 as you see some of these white-collar jobs disappear because of AI.
Well, that takes care of my crystal ball or read the tea leaves question. What have I not asked you today, Patrick, that you might wish I did?
Yeah, I think we've covered the slate. We've got several deals running to the finish line here before the end of the year, and we couldn't be any busier at the moment. We've got a lot of great clients, and we're lucky that we're in a really good spot in the franchising market at the moment, where, as we discussed, there's a lot of money chasing deals, and there's a lot of private equity funds that are doing really well, franchisors, and large franchisee group. So
we're working a little bit on some restaurant QSR, healthy restaurant type franchisors at the moment, and we'll probably do a few more of those in 2026.
Well, how about some contact info for those that want to get a little closer to the conversation than our time is allowed?
Great. Best way to reach out is P. Gallagher, P-G-A-L-L-E-H-E-R at boxwoodpartners.com, or just go to our website, www.boxwoodpartners.com, and there's a contact us form on the front page.
It's been a real pleasure. I've enjoyed getting to know you a little bit better, and hopefully we'll stay in touch along the way.
Great. Well, I appreciate it, Stan. Thanks so much for having me, and hopefully we talk soon and see each other at a conference here or there.
J. Patrick Gallagher, CEO and founder of Boxwood Partners. Thanks for being my guest today.
Appreciate it.
Well, that's a wrap for today. Remember to subscribe to Franchise Today wherever you chase pods, and I'll see you back here again next week. Until then, I'm Stan Friedman, wishing you the best, the very best of all things franchising, and Franchise Today is happening.
Franchise Today is a production of FRM Solutions, providing best-in-class CRM tools to empower relationships with prospective and existing franchisees. Find them online at frmsolutions.com. Join Stan every Wednesday at noon Eastern for another episode of Franchise Today.